Welcome to the Closing Mark Report. It's the first day of November 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group. He's in Decatur, Illinois. And we'll discuss the cash grain market today with Bill Mayer at the Grain Elevator located in Lexington. In agricultural news, Washington gets a glimpse of how the Bush administration feels about the Senate's version of the Farm Bill. Ed Schaefer speaks out on his nod to become the next U.S. Secretary of Ag. And there's a new poll out, so what else is new? Oh, wait, this one. This one says 84% of Americans believe something other than ethanol is causing the price of food to go up. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. Also this half hour, we'll hear a commentary from the Farm Bureau. And don't forget that just after the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us to take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast right here on this Thursday edition of AM 580's Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
In Chicago on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby December wheat down 29 and three quarters at 778 and a quarter. March contract at $8 and a quarter, down 29 and a quarter, and the May futures 768 finished 24 and a half lower. July, the harvest month for next year, at $6.62 and three quarters a bushel, down 9 and three quarters today. December corn futures at 368 and three quarters, 6 and three quarters lower. The March at 386, down 6 and three quarters, and May corn at 395 and three quarters, 5.5 cents lower. July futures 404 and three quarters, down 6 and a quarter. Next year's December down 4.5 cents at $4.16 and three quarters. December oats were a penny lower at 286 and three quarters. Soy complex now, November beans 990 and three quarters, 19 and a quarter lower. January futures down 19 and one quarter at $10.06.5. And the March futures at 1021 and three quarters, down 18 and three quarters. May 1025.5, down 19. July down 17 at 1032.5. And next year's November at 959.5, down 16 and three quarters. December bean meal 750, lower at 272.10. December bean oil at 4207, down 24. From the Mercantile Exchange side of the CME Group, settlement price for the December live cattle at $94.10 a hundredweight, 82.5 cents lower. November feeders up 17.5 cents at 108.62.5. January's at 108.30, down a dime. December lean hogs 52.25, 162.5 lower. February futures 95 cents lower at $59.90 a hundredweight. And the outside markets for the day, where December crude oil is currently trading $1.08 a barrel lower at $93.45, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average at 13,701 is down just about 228 points for the afternoon.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us on this Thursday to take a look at what happened to the Board of Trade, the Mercantile Exchange, the outside markets is Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group, out of Decatur, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Hi, Todd.
So should we start with the 228-point drop in the Dow Jones Industrial Average or the 29-point drop in the wheat market?
Well, let's stick with agricultural commodities. There's no doubt that outside market activity has been an influence over here in the ag pits, and that continues again to kind of be the case here today. Volatility is not necessarily a sign of a market that's going higher. I can say that. So I guess the volatility that we're maybe beginning to see in the marketplace, it doesn't mean that it's going to roll over and die and start trending lower. But anytime you get the type of uncertainty that we seem to be experiencing in the marketplace here, whether it's oil prices, interest rates, the economy, U.S. versus world economy, you're creating an uneasiness in the marketplace that people want to move to the sidelines, and that may kind of be the case here, what we're seeing in the the commodity complex as well as in the outside market activity, Todd.
It was a pretty ugly day in the wheat pit today. In particular, the outside down was in the day trade was awfully decisive to the downside.
Well, the old crop wheat futures have been following the bearish chart pattern of a head and shoulders top. So you have continued to see weakness in old crop wheat futures, and that's kind of been, was reaffirmed here again today. So you do have at least the old crop wheat futures in a downtrend. Now, your new crop July futures and on forward from July is more of a sideways deal, and basically what that is spread unwinding. The market was heavily long the front end, short the new crop, and as they liquidate out of the front end contracts, that gives the new crop some underlying support. So the new crop prices are trending sideways. But the wheat market has been in a more of a bearish mode than anything over the past 3 to 4 weeks.
And then if you turn your attention to the corn market and take a look at the technical tops there, do you see a trend down, and will that continue?
Well, I think you have to be concerned if you want to be a bull from this point forward. I don't know if you want to run to the hills on one day's worth of price action, especially since this is Thursday, because Thursday is usually counter trend days. And we started off higher on Monday. We had a counter market there on Tuesday. We went higher again yesterday, and now we've come back. But here we are 4 days into the week, or 1 day to go, and we're basically sitting lower for the week, which is not really a good sign on the technical market. And then especially since we kind of made higher highs, or we took out last week's highs. So we could be setting up ourselves for a round of technical bearishness here over the next 5 days or the next week or two between now and when we talk again, more of a consolidation to downward type move. So it kind of looks to me like we're in one of those modes now until we see what USDA kind of gives us a week from tomorrow.
But I thought we were in a post-harvest season rally, so we're in the winter doldrums already?
Oh, I don't know if I want to quite go that far, but... Well, we never really had much of a seasonal down. Remember, yeah. If you look at the charts, we basically turned this market up in late July. August was kind of a sideways deal, but the market was in a sideways to higher trend, basically coming out of the late July lows. We did get some harvest pressure and some downward movement in corn and soybean prices, but they stayed in their uptrend. So we were in a sideways to higher uptrend, basically since July. So it doesn't necessarily mean we're going into the winter doldrums, but there's limits to all kinds of rallies, and maybe we have kind of reached the limit of this rally that began in late July.
You know, when we were talking to you last year at this time, you were talking about prices moving forward and rolling forward to try to capture acres at that point to feed the ethanol boom. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are now as we look out into next fall and where you think this marketplace might be and how it might play out over the coming 9 to 12 months.
Well, we've got a lot of water going under the bridge, over the next 3 months. But I guess just visiting with farmers, I'm not convinced that we're headed toward a 7 or 8 million drop in corn plantings yet. I'm not convinced of that. So therefore, I'm not convinced that we're going to see a big increase in soybean plantings either. So I think that has to kind of be worked out, the market. I mean, we've seen a couple private estimates, but these are estimates, and farmers can change their mind, and they will change their mind. I think probably farmers are going to be kind of stay more flexible or as flexible as they can. There's a lot of anhydrous going on right now, especially if they can get the good hybrids. Anhydrous is definitely going to go on. But we're probably not as tight, or we look longer term, we're maybe not as tight on the supply-demand front as we were a year ago, especially on corn, because we've got a big crop here, and it does look like we've hit a blend wall, at least temporarily, on the ethanol front. So we have kind of, you know, loosened up the balance sheet for corn. Beans are fairly loose right now, but they're projected to get tighter, and I think that's going to be probably the issue probably as you go on into next spring, more so than probably on corn, where last year the market needed corn acres. This year the market may want to try to get some bean acres.
All right, so your expectations would be for corn to follow, soybeans to eventually lead, and wheat to follow?
Yeah, you know, but between now and the end of the year, and this is the window we're in, we're starting to, I think we begin to see this here today. There's been some big profits made on the long side of this market, whether it's oil or gold or corn or soybeans, and I think you're starting to see some year-end long profit taking maybe take place because of these uncertainties in the economic front, energy front, interest rate front. So the next month or two could be a little noisy, but I think as you turn the corner into the next year, then the market will begin to get focused. And like I mentioned to Dave this morning, once we get past this November crop report, the market really doesn't have much to focus on. That's the end of the measured crop estimates for the year. We're going to get a final estimate in January, but as far as the December report goes, that's going to just be minor supply-demand, the balance sheet-type changes. So the market is probably going to lose a lot of its focus here. We got a lot of corn piles out there to move into the pipeline over the next 90 days. So things could start changing here, especially after this week's price action.
Dan, thanks much.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker is with ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Mark Report on Thursdays. Dave Dickey is here now with today's Agricultural Newscast.
In agricultural news, USDA Acting Secretary Chuck Connor yesterday gave a glimpse of what is likely to be the White House position on the Senate version of the Farm Bill. Connor says the Bush administration favors efforts to provide more funding for renewable energy, conservation programs, promotion of specialty crops, rural development efforts, and aid to beginning and socially disadvantaged farmers. Connor says at the top of the list for reform is loan deficiency payments that under current rules allow a producer to, in Connor's words, pick his own price for crops. The White House Office of Management and Budget is expected to issue an official Farm Bill position before Senate floor debate. Meanwhile, Senate Agriculture Committee Chairman Tom Harkin acknowledges the Senate version of the Farm Bill, as currently written, could bring, in his words, a lot of WTO challenges because of higher crop support rates. Harkin says a better approach would be to expand green payments that reward soil, water, and wildlife conservation. Former North Dakota Governor Ed Schaefer says he's honored to be nominated for USDA Secretary.
It is humbling to follow my friend Secretary Johans into this position, and I hope that I can live up to the high standards of performance that he set at the agency. I'm also looking forward to working with Deputy Secretary Chuck Connor, who has faithfully served as the interim secretary. And if I'm honored with the Senate confirmation, it will be a great pleasure to join forces with the dedicated, talented, and loyal employees of the USDA to enhance our country's vibrant agriculture economy.
During 8 years as North Dakota governor, Schaefer promoted economic growth, cut the state payroll, and increased education funding. Schaefer has been a supporter of biofuels and farm exports. President Bush urged the Senate for swift passage of Schaefer's nomination. A new poll commissioned by the Renewable Fuels Association indicates 46% of Americans believe oil and not ethanol is the number one reason for increased food costs. RFA President Bob Dineen.
Well, this poll showed that Americans are really pretty darn smart. And despite all of the misinformation that's been out there, that the real cause of rising consumer food prices is something other than ethanol. Indeed, 84% of Americans believe that something other than ethanol is the major factor in rising consumer food prices. Indeed, 46% blame higher oil prices. 15% cite rising global demand for food. 14% are looking at drought and other weather conditions. And only 7% believe that ethanol is the primary cause.
The Melman poll, conducted between October 23rd and 25th, surveyed 1,000 adults with a margin of error of plus or minus 3.1%. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to visit our website, the address, willag.org. That's WILLAG.org. There you'll find most of our daily ag programming as an MP3 file. You can download that for free or sign up for the podcast, which will automatically download the file to your computer. Again, it's absolutely free, like most everything else on our website, including a really good weekend newsletter. Just hit subscribe at willag.org. We'll put you on the list, and you'll get a newsletter this weekend outlining what the latest trends in commodity markets might be. It's all at willag.org. Well, up next in today's Listener Opinion Forum, Champaign County Farm Bureau's Kirk Bilta harkens back to his farm values.
Grain is out of the field, and the 2007 harvest is in the books as we begin planning for the 2008 growing season. Harvest is over, and the season has left many area producers counting their blessings. With record yields and a strong market, farmers can't help but smile as they prepare for next year's crop. As we end this season, many thoughts go back to our first harvest, riding with our fathers or grandfathers in the combine, or tagging along in the grain truck as you haul corn or soybeans to town. We all have fond memories of growing up on the family farm. No matter how large your farm was or what commodities it produced, the family farm has a large presence in all of our lives. If raising corn, soybeans, hogs, cattle, and sheep weren't enough, a farm produces much more: a state of mind, a personality, and a way of life that we commonly call farm family values. These values might be as simple as attending the church of your choice, showing a friendly wave as you pass travelers on a country road, whether you know the driver or not, or even taking your counterpart's handshake for his word in a business deal. These values run deep in agriculture. Many organizations try to emulate such behavior with minimal success, while the farm family continues to promote its strong values. Growing up on a farm in East Central Illinois, I, like many of you, took part in these basics of agricultural life. My family and others in the community spent hours promoting such behavior and encouraged all of us youngsters to continue these traditions of family, community, and service. This summer, older 4-H members paired with a novice club member to prepare them to exhibit their livestock or modeling their homemade goods at the local county fair. FFA members worked together to raise awareness for agriculture and the food and fiber system during National Agriculture Week. I have seen no place where farm family values are more prevalent than in the Central Illinois field this fall. Dozens of farmers brought 4 combines and 9 grain trucks to harvest the crop of a local farmer battling cancer. These heroes spent a day away from their farms so that they might help another bring his crops in from the field. With Veterans Day in November and the holiday season growing near, the Champaign County Farm Bureau Women's Committee is baking for freedom. This group of 30 women spent months collecting glass canning jars, cake mixes, and icing, and has begun baking and shipping cakes to local soldiers fighting in Iraq. To date, the committee has sent nearly 300 cakes to Iraq, providing soldiers whom they barely know or have never even met a luxury from home. It is these values that we are all taught growing up on our family farms: putting others first, supporting those who provide freedom and stability in our world, and not once asking for the same in return. Like yours, my farm family taught me honesty, responsibility, and a strong work ethic that I feel is unmatched by any other profession or upbringing. As you complete field work this fall, I urge you to think back to your childhood. How have you promoted the values you learned? How might you continue to enrich the quality of farm family life? For the Champaign County Farm Bureau, I'm Kirk Bilta.
Kirk Bilta's comments are his own. They reflect his opinions. They do not necessarily reflect those of this station. We strongly urge listeners like you to become involved by sharing your views as well. To do so, just call us, the number 217-333-0850.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson's team of experts and strategic consulting approach utilize the latest technology. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
Bill Mayer, Roach Ag Marketing, located at the Elevator in Lexington, Illinois, now joins us for a look at the cash grain markets on this Thursday afternoon. Good afternoon to you, Bill.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about the marketplace in your area, please, and the basis.
Well, the basis here over the past week has continued to improve on both corn and soybeans. The freight along the rivers dropped again here this week, and that's helped improve the basis. I think if we see a little drop here, as Dan was saying earlier, in prices, futures prices, which, of course, I know there's no guarantee of that, but if we do see that to continue, I think that'll kind of help to continue to firm the bases as it slows some country movement. We did see some bean movement here this week because January beans did get over the $10 cash level their last couple of days. So we saw some offers picked up in that. But I think if, you know, now that we're back down here today, we'll probably see a slowing of movement. And we typically see a seasonal better basis going into Thanksgiving or so. Maybe want to be a little bit careful this year. Everything seems to be kind of moved up about a week or 10 days. So we may not see that last quite as long as normal. We may see the piles get picked up and some of that gets started a little bit earlier than normal.
So, on the idea then, would you push farmers or ask farmers to be ready to market a crop that they normally would have locked away in the bin, whether it be corn or soybeans?
Yeah, we've actually been doing that here this week. We've been looking at some January sales, making some January sales just to kind of get everybody logistically, cash flow wise, corn bins, all that, make sure that they don't get pushed into a position where they have to make sales they don't want to make. So we made some additional sales here this week on corn and beans.
And do you have a strategy in which you turn around and protect them from an upside move, or are they satisfied where they're selling?
I think right now on the soybeans at these levels, we have to be pretty well satisfied. And on the corn, I guess at this point, I'm not real excited about going out. It depends on the percent that the guy has sold. If he's got most of his corn sold, we're looking at getting some protection on.
We appreciate you being with us. What are your bids for the day?
$3.58 for January corn, $9.75 for beans, $5.88 for new crop wheat.
Bill, thanks much.
Thanks.
Bill Mayers with Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois, joins us on Thursday afternoons to take a look at the cash grain market. In just 2 minutes, we'll talk with Pete Levitt about the agricultural weather forecast for the day. Your regional newscast comes up next.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Governor Blagojevich says he's hoping he and legislative leaders can agree on a transportation bill. But Blagojevich says if they can't, he has a contingency plan to give Chicago area transit agencies the cash they need to avoid massive service cuts and fare increases that are slated to start this weekend. The governor says there's state money available to delay the crisis, but he stresses that the Regional Transportation Authority and Chicago Transit Authority will have to accept the cash. The governor says if they don't, they're playing a dangerous game of chicken with riders. Blagojevich commented in Chicago before an afternoon flight to Springfield, where he's scheduled to meet with top lawmakers as the House returns to session today. The audit of a contractor accused of bilking the state of Illinois out of more than $2 million has been turned over to Cook County prosecutors. A spokeswoman for the Blagojevich administration says a months-long delay in handing over the audit was because it hadn't been completed. The author of the monthly University of Illinois Flash Index doesn't think a recession is in the cards for the state. The index fell for a fourth straight month, suggesting that Illinois' economy isn't performing as well as a few months ago, but is still growing. Economist Fred Gertz says Illinois isn't as likely to be hurt by the subprime lending crisis or by the slumping auto industry as other states. A former U of I professor who some call the father of socioeconomic accounting has died. David Linnows was an advisor to four former U.S. presidents on public policy issues, specifically privacy and streamlining government. Linnows continued to work on the Urbana campus well after he retired as a professor of political economy and public policy in the 80s. He was 90 years old when he died this week in a suburb of Washington, D.C. Police in Vermilion County are still investigating a crash that killed a 16-year-old boy from Penfield. Police say Austin Pickett was a passenger in the car that drove off a county road west of Potomac late last night and hit a tree. Ivy Tech Community College plans to institute a tobacco ban on its Lafayette, Indiana campus starting next year. Students will have to go off campus to smoke or use any form of tobacco after summer classes begin in 2008. Other Ivy Tech campuses are already smoke-free. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. We're joined on a Thursday afternoon, as we always are, by Pete Levitt to take a look at what's happening in the world of agricultural weather. Hi, Pete.
Hi, Todd.
Tell me about the Midwestern weather, please.
Okay, well, I think we're going to see fair weather right through the weekend. Maybe just a few showers showing up late Sunday or Monday in the eastern Corn Belt, but I think it'll front will get through Illinois without much problems, and we're going to see mild temperatures at least a little bit above normal through Sunday, and then we turn cooler, and it looks like we're going to start our November pattern early next week with cooler temperatures, which appears to me to be the persistent pattern we're going to be looking at through November.
November pattern with lows how low?
Well, next week we'll see temperatures dipping down just to about freezing or a little below in the upper 20s to low 30s next week on the minimums. High temperatures ranging up to upper 40s to low 50s, which is close to normal, but a little bit on the colder than normal side. And I think we're going to see just a series of systems come down, big high-pressure systems. Not much moisture, plenty of cool weather, and so I'm sort of giving you a short-term and a long-term outlook for the next few weeks.
You've been keeping track, I suspect, of the winter wheat progress and how the weather has been hampering or helping that in the United States. Can you tell me about it?
Yeah, the winter wheat is really not in as good shape, I think, as people might think with all the moisture that they've had late this summer. It turned out that some of that moisture wasn't really very helpful for the crop. It delayed field work and harvesting, and so the planting is late. We're getting reports of emergence not up to par with maybe 30% of the wheat crop in parts of central western Kansas and down through Oklahoma, especially southern Oklahoma and Texas, about 30%, not showing much good emergence at all. So this wheat is not getting off to a good start, and it's only got another week or two before cold enough temperatures come in to start the winter dormancy period. So I would say this is not a great start to winter wheat. It's not bad everywhere, but the southern plains, it seems to me, are starting off with a problem.
Well, I suspect we probably should check in on the other northern hemisphere wheat planting areas, Ukraine and India. How are they doing?
So far, so good in both places. India's had good moisture, had an excellent monsoon, and the weather's cooperated right into the fall season with even a little additional moisture. So that looks pretty good. Ukraine has had its ups and downs, but it's had some moisture, additional moisture coming. I think things look pretty good down there. The other problem here, of course, Australia's crop, which is maturing now, never did get the rain in time to make a good crop, so they've got another bad crop coming, and the rains are finally arriving for their summer crops, but it's too late to help the wheat.
Stay in the South American area, or in the Southern Hemisphere, and talk just a bit about South America before I let you go.
Yeah, South America, finally the showers are working up into Central Brazil, the south central states, which has been the driest area in Minas and parts of Sao Paulo. They've had plenty of rain down in Rio Grande do Sul in the south. The rains did get up into the Mato Grosso a week or two ago. So the one area that's been dry is now getting the showers, and prospects, I think, are looking pretty good across that whole southern crop region of Brazil. The Argentine getting additional shower activity, and I don't see problems there at all.
Pete, we appreciate you being with us.
My pleasure.
Pete Levitt, meteorologist, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. Happens each and every Thursday afternoon. Don't forget to tune in tomorrow morning at 8:49 for our first look at the markets. With your director of Ag Programming, Dave Dickey, I'm Todd Gleason for U of I Extension, the host of the Closing Mark Report and Commodity Week. You have a great afternoon.